everyone, and welcome to part 4B of IP in a Pod. I'm joined today by my colleagues David, Olivia, and Raheem. You'll all remember in part 4A, we looked at the issues around the ownership of rights in content produced by individuals and collaborators at home during the coronavirus lockdown. In this podcast, we're going to look at the other side of the coin, that is, the rights that might be infringed in the said production of creative content. We're going to look at what copyright infringement actually is and how rights owners can establish infringement. We're also going to look at some defences that creators may be able to rely on in the face of an infringement claim. And finally, we'll look at some of the practicalities around enforcing copyright and specifically how we can do that online. We thought this would be an interesting topic because creators might be taking a slightly less rigid approach to this at the moment. For example, I think quite a lot of people think if they're creating content at home for their own enjoyment, they're probably immune to claims of copyright infringement. But that's generally not the case, even if you're not creating it in a commercial context.
Thanks, Pete. I thought we'd first have a look at what exactly infringement is and what acts are restricted by a copyright owner. So the main point to consider is that the owner of the copyright in a work has the exclusive right to deal with that work. Now, this includes copying, performing, making an adaptation of, and otherwise communicating the work to the public. So copying is more than just taking a photocopy. If you think about a literary or a dramatic or a musical or even artistic work, copying means reproducing that work in any material form. This would therefore include, for example, maybe making a recording of a written story. So reading it aloud and recording it would constitute infringement of the underlying written work. Now performing and making an adaptation of, they're pretty clear on what they mean. Otherwise, communicating the work to the public really means broadcasting the work or making the work available via some sort of electronic transmission. Now, if someone does any of these acts, so copying, performing, making adaptation of, or communicating the work to the public, and they do it to either the whole or to a substantial part of a protectable work without permission, then they are at risk of a claim of copyright infringement. Now, really, it comes down to a question of fact. And it obviously differs on a case-to-case basis. It's usually pretty easy to see when someone's copied the whole of a copyright piece of work, but obviously it's more tricky if you're considering whether someone has copied a substantial part. The test is whether a substantial part of the original work has been copied. It doesn't need to make up a substantial part of the copied output. It's very much a qualitative rather than quantitative assessment. So thinking sort of practically, if you're thinking about music copyright infringement will be established where all that's been taken from a song was a pattern of chord repetition, even though that was a sort of relatively small part of the overall piece of music. It was held because that chord pattern was the key hook of the original song. It was deemed to make up a substantial part of it. Now, infringing acts, they kind of fall into one of two categories. They're either acts of primary infringement. These acts require no knowledge or intention to be shown on the part of the person who's done the copying. Or they're acts of secondary infringement, and that's where the infringer needs to have a certain knowledge or at least reasonable grounds for having such knowledge in order to be found liable. And this will include things like importing infringing copies into the UK or exhibiting an infringing copy in public. Secondary infringing acts might also include making or importing articles that are designed to make copies of copyright works. Or if you are if you own a licensed premises, allowing premises to be used to show an infringing performance. And if that performance infringes the copyright in a dramatic or a literary work, then the premises owner could be liable for secondary infringement for letting that work be put on.
Thanks, Olivia. That's really interesting. It's quite funny, the substantial part bit. Technically, you could infringe someone's copyright by just taking a line from the chorus of their song, for example. And I think people don't necessarily know that. People might think, oh, well, I haven't taken the whole song. So, that's fine.
Exactly.
And yeah, that's really interesting.
People often think that it's okay because my copied work doesn't have all of it in it, it's just got a bit of it. But if the bit of it that the secondary work recreates is really the kind of key or the crux, or it's the winning line of that song, the one that's the kind of the catchy bit that everyone remembers and sings along to, then you are definitely at risk of being liable for copyright infringement. I think something that's also worth bearing in mind is that just because someone has already put something online, and even if it's accessible by everybody, it doesn't mean that everyone else is free to use that content. And obviously a topic of linking to people's websites, it could be a whole podcast in itself. But the thing to remember is that if you are linking to other websites or thinking about reproducing material from other third-party sites, be cautious. Make sure that you are careful as to what you're linking to, because even though it's on the internet, it doesn't necessarily mean it's fair game. And it's very important to check what is being linked to, rather than just assuming that because it's out there, it's okay for you to use. By re-linking that material or re-referring to that material, you could be communicating that to a new public and therefore at risk of infringement.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's something that I seem to get quite a lot, is, you know, people saying, oh, well, I'm going to reshare this, but it's fine because I've got it from Google Images, so it's already out there. That might be a good defense if you're going to breach someone's confidential information, but it's not a good defense if you're infringing someone's copyright. So just thinking of some other examples that I think might be topical because of this lockdown and the kind of content that people are creating, I guess the kind of the very basic example of where this might be an issue, both for creators and for rights holders, is if someone were to share a clip of a film or a TV show that they've recorded on social media or some other website, I think that's quite a clear-cut example of where you've taken, you've copied, and you've distributed to the public a work that's protectable by copyright. And I think that's a clear example of infringement, and I think most people will understand and agree with that. But obviously, the picture gets much more complicated. I was thinking about other contexts where this may come into play. For example, if you're talking to your followers on Instagram or Insta Live and you're playing a song in the background, the owners of the copyright in that song, and there could be several, there could be people that own the music, people that own the lyrics, they have an exclusive right, as Olivia said, to reproduce or to deal with those works. Actually, by posting a video online with that song playing in the background, you are distributing that work to the public. And there are some defences, which I think David will come on to in a bit, that you may be able to rely on. But here, I'm not sure that you'd be able to successfully argue that having something, a song on in the background, was an incidental inclusion in a video. I think that would seem quite difficult.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly come across some interesting examples over the years. I mean, if, for example, like producing travel blogs and including photographs that have been found seemingly freely available on the internet, or producing online viral videos with music as a background. One thing that you have to actually be a bit careful for is there are sort of resources available, particularly online, which claim to have photographs and even music that is available either sort of without any copyright restrictions. But sometimes we've had clients who've been a bit caught out because it turns out that the images or the music that have been posted on these databases and claimed to be sort of licensed on a royalty-free basis or with a sort of very small sort of tiny fee actually turned out to have been themselves copies that have been made without the original copyright owner's permission. And you'll find, particularly if you're the person with financial resources and you reproduce something, then the copyright owner will come after you. And the fact that you may have got it from a third party site who claimed to be providing it free of any restrictions or any requirement for royalty payments won't give you any defence. The onus is on you, the person using the material, to go out and to get any consent that you might need. Now, as Pete mentioned, there are actually quite a few defences and exceptions to copyright infringement, but they're all pretty specific and limited in scope, because the aim is not to try and undermine the commercial value of the work that's protected by copyright. So you can only avail yourselves of them in quite limited circumstances. But I'm only going to talk about some of the main ones that are potentially available when you're creating content. So one of the principal ones, in which people might be familiar with, is an exception for fair dealing of a copyright work for purposes of criticism or review. or also for reporting current events. Now, there's a few key points to know about this. The terms criticism, review, and even reporting current events aren't strictly defined in the law. They're just, the courts just try to give them their normal, natural meaning. And also, you don't have to make any a particularly substantial comment for something to count as criticism or review, but you do have to do something. So, for example, reproducing a section of an article from a newspaper in the content you're producing with no other explanation or comment isn't going to count as criticism or review, and it isn't, won't itself count as reporting of current events, because it's the original article that would be reporting the events, not your reproduction of it. Also, it's important to note that your use has to qualify as fair dealing. In many cases, this will require an attribution of the original copyright owner of the work. It also means that you should only use the minimum amount of an original work that you need for your purposes. So, for example, if you want to review a song, you'll almost never need to reproduce the entirety of the song to produce a review. You know, a tiny extract might be enough so that your audience knows what you're talking about. Whereas if you're writing a critique of a work of art, then you may have some justification for showing at least a scaled down version of the entire artwork that you're talking about. It can be something that you are producing for commercial purposes. Another important, potentially important defence or exception to copyright infringement is an exception for fair dealing for purposes of quotation. So you can reproduce an extract of a copyright work. And here, interestingly, it's not limited to literary works. You can produce a quote that can consist of a section of music or a sound recording or even an artistic work. And that quotation doesn't have to be for purposes of criticism or review. But again, you should only use the sort of minimum amount you need, reasonably need for your purposes. And you have to include sufficient attribution of the original copyright owner. So if you're a business and someone produces a review of one of your products, then in your marketing materials, you might want to include a quotation from that review. Or if you're a restaurant business, again, if someone reviews your restaurant business and you want to produce a quote of a favorable review in a newspaper or online, then you, provided you only include a small quote and you attribute the original author and copyright owner, then that should be sufficient. But for example, if you're producing a musical work and you include a sample from another musical work with nothing else, with no attribution of where the sample came from, with no comment on the sample, then that's unlikely to count as a quotation, because the court has suggested that for something to be a quotation, you have to enter into a dialogue with it to some degree. And a relatively new exception for the UK is one for the purposes of caricature, parody, or pastiche. Again, there has to be fair dealing of the original copyright work, and the courts have indicated that for something to be a parody, it has to evoke the original work, but be noticeably different from it. And it has to constitute an expression of humour or mockery. But provided you can meet those hurdles, that you produce something that is noticeably different from the original, and there is some element of humour or mockery, then you may be able to rely on that exception in those circumstances. There is one other thing I thought I'd mention, because of all the children currently being homeschooled during the lockdown period, is that there's a whole series of exceptions that relate to education, including use for private copying for private study and research. But again, the copy of any original works you have to make for those purposes have to be pretty limited. And this whole suite of exceptions that apply specifically in relation to education, the most important thing to remember is that they can only be relied on by schools and other educational establishments. And in the UK, there's a strict category list of other educational establishments. So include things like universities, theological colleges, and institutions providing higher or further education. But they can't be relied on by businesses providing educational materials. And so, for example, if you're a business that is providing training materials to others about how to use your products, you wouldn't be able to benefit from any of the exceptions that apply under the education category. So there are some exceptions there, and some of which you might be able to make use of if you want to include third-party material in your content, but you have to take a great deal of care to see if you fit within one of those limited categories.
Thanks, David. That's really interesting. I guess the lesson is to just really think about everything you're posting and check whether you've got any of these rights or defences. I think the other thing that sprung to my mind that people often rely on, which isn't really a defence or an exception, is just the fact that nobody's ever going to enforce their copyright against you, which I think is what a lot of people say or think if they're producing content on their own from home. And that may be true, may not be true. So certainly if something goes viral, it may not be true. But I think that's an interesting point, and it kind of it warrants a discussion around the practicalities of what to do if you think someone is infringing your copyright, and how this actually plays out. So I think in an ideal world, we're all intellectual property litigators, and I think we'd all agree in an ideal world, if someone's infringing your copyright, you should issue court proceedings. A court trial is great because justice gets to play out, everyone gets a fair trial and a fair say, and the result is that courts have really wide powers to deal with infringements, i.e. through injunctions, through compensation, through damages, and things like that. However, in the real world, it can be very expensive to enforce copyright in this way. Fully fought actions can cost hundreds of thousands of pounds, and very few rights owners have either the will or the ability to bring that type of action. Of course, the other thing to consider, especially in the days of social media, is the reputational angle. So if a big corporate or a studio uses their copyright to bully individuals releasing full videos from their bedroom, the negative publicity could come back to bite them. That doesn't necessarily mean that these individuals are safe from these claims, or that owners are helpless to protect their rights, because there are many other ways of enforcing. And I think as most content these days tends to be shared through various online platforms, it's worth touching on the policies that each of them will have to protect individuals' rights.
Thanks, Pete. Yeah, so I've taken a little look at some of the policies that the platforms which we looked at in the previous, well, in part A of this podcast, namely YouTube and LinkedIn. And they both have a process whereby a user who feels that, or not even a user, just a person or company that feels that their copyright has been infringed by a user, can basically submit a copyright infringement notification on YouTube or a notice of copyright infringement on LinkedIn. And this basically commences an online legal process with the platform and the user, where they can say, this user has uploaded content, I feel it infringes my copyrights, can you take a look at it? The platforms will then give the person that uploaded the content an opportunity to put their case forward, and then they will make a determination as to whether that content was actually infringement or not. And if it was, then they have the power to take down the content and leave a message there saying that the content was taken down because it infringed X's copyright. Points to consider if you were to file one of those complaints would be that the complaints do need to be in good faith, and you should always consider the exceptions that David mentioned earlier, such as whether the content would come under the fair use or fair dealing exceptions, or any of the other exceptions that were mentioned. And then if you are a user and you find yourself and you find that your content has been taken down because it violated copyright, there are penalties that the platforms can impose on you. So YouTube actually has a strike system. If you have content taken off YouTube because it violates copyright, then you receive a strike. If you receive a strike, then you have to go through an educational program supplied by YouTube called Copyright School, and they don't let you upload any more content until you've done that program. If you have a strike because your complaint was from something that you did on a live stream, then your ability to live stream is restricted for 90 days.
And on YouTube, if you receive 3 strikes, then YouTube has the right to terminate your accounts, any associated channels, and delete all of your videos. So there can be pretty serious consequences if you're a repeat offender on YouTube. LinkedIn doesn't have a strike procedure as such, but it does have the right to remove or disable content that it deems to have infringed copyright of others. And under its user agreement, LinkedIn has a right to restrict, suspend, or terminate accounts. So it's likely to be the case that repeat offenders would find themselves facing more severe action, such as having their accounts deleted. And the points to consider in relation to that is that termination of an account would include losing all of the followers or subscribers associated with that account, which can be really detrimental, particularly to businesses who have worked for many years to build up a follower base on social media, because in one moment, all of those followers and subscribers are lost. Strikes on YouTube can also affect a YouTuber's ability to monetize their content. And it's not exactly clear how, but YouTube does make it clear that strikes do affect ability to monetize content. And the third point to consider is that if content is taken down, then a message will appear saying that the content was removed because it was a copyright infringement. And that can obviously be quite bad publicity if a consumer is on your profile, tries to see your content and sees that it was taken down because it was a copyright infringement. It doesn't look good on a professional or commercial level. So those are just some things to bear in mind. If you're someone who feels that your work has been copied, or if you have been caught copying.
Thanks, Raheem. That's very helpful. I guess the takeaway then is that even though a full court case or other types of enforcement of copyright are quite expensive and quite difficult to do, it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. And suspension of someone's account, if you're an influencer and you're making loads of money through your online presence, the suspension of your account through this is fatal, really. So something to consider for everyone. I think also to add to that, and as someone who has actually filed several of these notices on behalf of clients, it's interesting how the different platforms take them on board. Some are certainly better than others, because there's obviously a balance for these platforms to weigh between protecting the rights of the copyrights and protecting their users from overzealous people filing to take down illegitimate copies.
I think that's right, Pete. I also thought it was quite interesting from past experience that because copyright is a creative, particularly creative IP right, although lots of IP rights obviously are creative, copyright has got a very creative sort of element to it. You often find that cases you think shouldn't be taken much further suddenly go a long way or get all the way to trial, often because there's very personal feelings behind content that's being created. So if you as a big company sort of end up taking the material that some sort of one-man band has created, you might think, well, it's okay because we've got the funds and we can take this all the way. But never forget the power of somebody who feels wronged, someone who believes they have rights in something they've put together.
Yeah, definitely. I think copyright is one of the main things that I see goes way further than you think with your sort of commercial lawyer's hat on it should do, for those exact reasons that there's more to it than the commerce, as opposed to, say, a commercial dispute. Well, I think that's probably all that we have to say on this. So thank you very much for your time. As always, please do get in touch if you have any comments or questions. And I'm sure we'll be back very soon with another episode of IP in a Pod. Thank you.